I know.
Color.
Because I want to. Oh, no. We're recording now.
That's all
Oh,
right.
what
Go
is
on.
Mike gonna record himself saying
Mike
stuff
has
in
his mic
podcasts that
on.
would be unreal?
Yeah. Have you got the sideways camera to you, though?
Yeah.
He actually does.
Yeah.
I saw a really good parody account taking the mick out of this. I will forward it to you both.
I think
I
I
mean,
need
I
to do
just
that.
think I genuinely struggle to find time to do like social media content, but I really enjoy doing it when I do, and I really enjoy the conversations that come out of it. I actually this year I've massively lost my confidence on social media. I genuinely felt like I couldn't really post anything, like I didn't have anything to say. Like I've said everything that I want to say already, and everything that I felt I might want to say just felt like just repetition, which I know is what social media is. But and then I just got into this cycle of then, because it wasn't something I was doing all the time, I then no longer had time for it because my time had got filled with other things. So I sort of want to try and be a little bit more consistent with posting, because
Don't
I
you think
still
that
genuinely talking to people
potentially
though.
it will take more time to clip up a reel from the recording of this than it will just to say what you wanted to say to the camera?
Yeah, but it's more about
Yeah, but I look
remembering.
like an authority in it because I'm on a podcast.
Authenticity and all that.
It's authenticity.
Authentic. No, but in all fairness, at least you're talking to people. I imagine many people record those not talking to anyone. I saw one taking the mic
Oh,
out of that.
100%.
And then the other
Yeah.
one was if you sound like an authority if you just put the Interstellar soundtrack over the top as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
See,
is that the one?
I
Do
do that
you?
quite a lot, but only because for some reason, when I put my phone over the top of my laptop, because I don't have a stand for it, there's like a weird like reverb sound, and I haven't bothered to buy a microphone that sticks or anything. So like you can hear that a little bit. So I just put piano music over it.
But it makes me laugh because they call it like inspirational piano music or
Yeah.
something. So you know what the person's getting at. That's embarrassing.
I heard, I don't know how true it is, I read that apparently when Instagram reshift their sounds, if they get rid of a sound and you already have your sound attached to that, potentially your video is then posted without sound. So I've stopped adding things, adding music to to videos.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know how true that is though. I definitely didn't make it up. I definitely read that somewhere, but I don't know how true that
There's
is.
lots of apparently's, aren't there, with social media? It does it, and it's odd because you almost think like if they just told you what the algorithm was, then everyone would just do what they wanted.
Does
But because they
anyone
don't
actually
tell
know what the
you,
algorithm is,
no, of
though?
course nobody knows.
I think that's what makes it like worse and worse. Like I deleted, and not that I ever posted on TikTok, but I deleted it just from scrolling on it because I realized there's
It's a
absolutely
real time sink,
nothing
isn't it?
good on it. So I've just started reading before bed instead of scrolling on TikTok. And I just think if you, and I was thinking about, how could I use this platform? And maybe it's like the algorithm of what they're showing me, but genuinely, it's like some of the worst stuff I've ever seen. Like there is no value in it
It's much
whatsoever.
longer now as well, isn't it? It's not 15 seconds as it was.
Yeah,
Some
it can be
videos
like
can
up to
go.
minutes, I think. Yeah. And I just think, no, not got time for it. Don't want to make content like that. Not for me. And then I think what's way more valuable is like a searchable platform. So if you're thinking of having like numerous platforms, like, yeah, you've got Instagram, but nobody searches stuff on Instagram, right? It's just feed based. You're just like, whatever it shows me, like, that's it. Now and again, if Dan was like, oh, go and look at X post, I might search something, but it's very rare that you actually use it for that. Whereas if you go on something like YouTube, you would search for something, right? Or like maybe a blog platform, like you would search for something. And I think that, or a podcast, again, you would search for a podcast. I think that's more valuable because
But
people
you
are
know
actually
what?
looking for you.
That's kind of what the TikTok algorithm does. Like it shows you the things that it thinks you're interested in, and then it has suggested searches at the bottom based on it. So, like for
I've never seen
example,
that bit.
yeah, they've started to do it a lot. So, for example, that someone posted a thing that came up on my feed that was me learning about the news about Lauryn Hill, and so at the bottom it says search Lauryn Hill controversy. And then, so you end up searching Lauryn Hill controversy, and then that's when you get stuck in the rabbit hole of trying to find out what it is that person's talking about, which is
All these
actually
apps are
it's
just
just
fighting for
more
attention,
ways of
aren't
getting
they?
you to sync it. But I think the thing that I find frustrating about YouTube and about those sorts of searchable platforms is that then once things become saturated with crap, it's impossible to find what you're actually looking for. Like for example, if you're looking for like a live performance of a song or something like that, someone like a song that you like and you want different versions of it or whatever, you look up This Live, and instead of finding the videos of it, you find videos that are pretending to be that.
Yeah,
I found it's actually someone reacting to it, or someone's like videoed it off their TV. And the picture looks all crystal clear, like a screenshot of it, but it's actually someone mobile phone recording it at a gig or something like that. And it just makes me so irritated because I can never find what it is that I'm actually looking for. But the people are winning with their clicks. And that's, I think, this is the problem. When stuff becomes about clicks, people will do anything to get you to click on their thing, even if it's not what you want. Have you ever watched any of those Facebook videos that come up? After you watch a Facebook video, it comes up with suggested videos, and they'll be like 12 minutes long, and it will say, you won't believe what happens at the end. And it will be like someone making a recipe and nothing happens.
Oh, just to make you watch it for its entirety.
It's infuriating.
Yeah. No, I logged on to, I sent you both. I logged on to Facebook for the first time in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And someone put Plandemic 2.0.23.24. And I was like, right, logging back off Facebook. Yeah. No, too thanks. Much. Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing I use Facebook now is the groups.
It's good for that. It's free, isn't it? You know, if you've got free groups set up on there, it's great for community and stuff. But I don't know how good it is for statuses and how many people see what, and who knows. I think with all social media, it ends up being a case of everyone fighting for everyone's attention, and essentially everyone's just throwing shit at the wall, hoping something sticks.
Well, that's what I think about feed-based social media, because you have to like get someone's attention within a second, and it has to be interesting or whatever. Whereas if you can essentially use that as a bit of a funnel into like a searchable platform. So like really the only reason that I put so much time into Instagram is because I want people to listen to my podcast, because that's when people sign up to work with me, and that's when I can actually help them, right? So that's kind of the funnel. But then you've got to think about that when you're posting content, like how do I make this like enough value that someone would be like, oh, I got a little bit of value from that. I'm willing to give this person my time and I'll listen to a podcast. And then they're much more likely to then actually interact with you, feel like they get to know you, get more value from you, and then potentially work with you.
And you have to, it's not just, again, it's so frustrating because that attention grabbing, you have to not only make the first 0.5 of a second dramatic, you have to have make a Canva picture, which would have previously been your actual Instagram post. So you have to make an infographic as the front cover. You have to subtitle the stuff, edit the captions, edit the video, jump cut it so that it's short enough that people will actually watch it till the end. And it just is like, it's a lot, isn't it? It's a lot.
Especially if you're trying to like convey being authentic, I guess, and you feel like you have to turn the notch on that performative switch. Like you're doing all of these things to capture someone's attention, when actually like the important bit is the message, but the amount of effort you put into just capturing them in.
And all messages need nuance generally, right?
Yeah.
So again, that doesn't help because people will be, you don't get much value from a 15 second clip about.
Seems to be like a pretty consistent running theme, actually. Social media is just a terrible place for communicating.
And here we are.
Well, that's why you go long form on podcasts, so you can discuss that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. I have been putting video, even if I film them on my phone, I haven't got a fancy camera, I just use my phone, but anything over 3 minutes, I just put on a YouTube channel now, just as it in multiple places, because I don't gather anyone watches anything over the minute on Instagram anyway.
Well, you can't post over a minute, can you?
Think you can now. It's up to 2 seconds.
You just can't call it, it can't be a reel.
Oh, yeah, reels. I think reels go up to 90 seconds now.
Yeah, but if you post it as a post, it still comes up. It looks exactly the same as a reel. Like the posting is the same, but it can be as long as you like. And that's because I've done that before, where I've got like two and a half or 3 minute videos, and I didn't realize that a post is different to a reel. And I thought it was posting the whole thing. It just cuts it off at 90 seconds if you're posting it as a reel. But then find out who watches it till the end, because then they're like, did it cut off the end? I'm like, oh, you actually watched it. That's so nice.
I had more than 15 seconds of your attention. Thank you. But yeah, with the clicking and scrolling yesterday, I didn't see too much that aggravated me, because that's what we were going to have a little chat about, wasn't it?
Well, I don't think we were necessarily going to talk about aggravation. I think we were just going to talk about...
Harsh use the word.
It's just hard to... It's this time of year where, you know, like... maybe 5-10 years ago, you had on social media everyone just telling you how to lose weight after Christmas, right? And then gradually it then morphed into everyone telling you not to worry too much about having to lose weight after Christmas. And then it's then gone through to like the sarcasm of people telling you that you don't need Instagram to tell you whether or not you need to lose weight like after Christmas. And then you've got people like trolling the people who are trying to help people, or who are trying to help people who want to lose weight, but are also then there's other people trolling the people that are telling people that they don't have to lose weight. And then I think it just, if you were somebody, like if I just think back to my pre-lifestyle change times and I was on social media navigating this, I just think I wouldn't really know what to do, because on one hand, I'd be looking for excuses of people telling me, you don't need to worry about losing weight, but I also would be wanting to. And then I think you then get this situation where people feel guilty for wanting to lose weight. And I certainly know, like when I've been wanting to put posts up of, talking about lifestyle change after Christmas, I've almost felt guilty about using the terms fat loss or weight loss, because I've worried that that's such now a taboo subject on social media that everyone's going to think that I'm diet culture if I talk about it. But the reality of the matter is, and I include myself in this, is a lot of people want to lose weight after Christmas because they've had probably like not just a day, but probably 3-4 weeks maybe of like snacking more than usual, having more food available at work, Christmas parties, drinking more, all of those sorts of things. And people want to get back onto some kind of, you know, normality, but not just in their lifestyle, because that's not that hard to do. They also want their clothes to fit again. Is that all right? I think it is.
Yeah,
I think we all get lost in what other people are thinking about us rather than, and appeasing those other people rather than just putting ourselves first. And I think that's just the nature of social media, because there's this inherent deep rooted thing where we do want approval from other people. We do want that pat on the back. We do want people to reassure us and tell us we're making the right decision. But it's not that sexy to say, well, only you could decide that. we want to be told that.
But it's also like it's hard to be objective about your own experience, because Katie Crew did a really good post about this yesterday, because she was talking about how, yeah, it can be really positive to want to eat salads and get more nutrients and do, you know, exercise more after Christmas. But actually, it's much more about what the intent is behind those things. Are you doing it to punish yourself for having a good time over Christmas? Or are you doing it because you want to, like, you know, empower yourself to be more healthy and all of those sorts of things? And actually, the intent behind the action is almost more important than the action itself.
Oh,
and I really
100%.
Like that.
Yeah, like
it's hard to be honest with yourself about it, isn't it?
But intent is everything. That's what makes a restrictive diet restrictive, is intent. It's not necessarily the diet itself. And actually, you know, like people talk about like, oh, this is, you know, that's too low a calories, it's restrictive, that's too high, or you know, like you shouldn't cut carbs, blah blah blah. It's completely the intent. Like you could say that you want to go out for a 5K run in the morning and that's the most empowering thing you do all day, or the exact same action if you're telling yourself you have to because you've overeaten and it's a punishment. It's a completely different thing. So intent matters massively. I think what's interesting about this is any, you know, like fitness industry people who are saying that you shouldn't be promoting diet and exercise programs at this time of year are leading into diet culture. Like, because that is the underlying, probably subconscious for them, belief that diet and exercise is a negative thing, or that you would be doing it for negative reasons. And actually, like, we should be promoting exercise at every moment of the year. Like, it is undoubtedly the best thing that you can possibly do for your body. Like, there is nothing better you can do for your health than regularly exercise. And yet we've turned it into this negative thing. Same with diet. Like, why is it turned into such a negative when actually it's literally the epitome of self-care would be to fuel yourself correctly and to make sure you're looking after yourself, like to exercise, right? And now we're like, oh, we shouldn't be promoting this, it might be negative to people, you know. It's like, you shouldn't be forcing people to do this. One, no one's forcing anything, and two, like, you're leading into the narrative that it would be a diet culture type fad diet. And you know what, if that is what you're promoting, sure, hold off potentially forever and don't promote it. But anyone else, like, I feel very clear in my message now. So I'm like, I don't mind promoting my programs at any point during the year, because it isn't about restriction. And like, we care about intent. It's one of the things I speak about most, is like the intent behind your actions. is what makes dieting successful or unsuccessful. Like, if you're forcing yourself to do it from a place of, I hate myself, I hate my body, like, it's never going to work. If you're saying that, if you realize like that actually this is such a positive thing that you're doing and that it is self-care, then you're much more likely to A, enjoy it, and B, stick to it and get far better results and actually be able to maintain that long term. So I don't see a problem promoting it at any point during the year.
Do you think that
depends on the I think it just depends on the lens that people are looking at it, doesn't it? And it, like, you have a very clear understanding and you have the awareness behind your message, which you're really clear in articulating a lot of the times. But I also think that there probably are, and again, this is not to say what anyone else should be doing with their messaging, but there probably are people that at this moment in time are going out of the way to leverage the pain, the discomfort, the shame, the guilt that people are experiencing to put them on something a little bit more restrictive. Like, you have a good understanding how you work. It's all about empowerment and everything. And I don't think there's, you can't place judgment on how people are doing it. But I think with marketing spiel, it always comes from this place of there has to be a villain and there has to be a hero. So there has to be this dance in which around the holidays, kind of what you were suggesting, Mike, in which some people are saying, well, these people are doing it wrong, but I have this as an alternative. And I won't say who it's from, but that message that you sent yesterday, Em, but people feeding into it, is the intent behind that is clearly to demonize and villainize these people that are promoting a certain approach, but because I have an alternative to offer you. So it's really difficult to sift through that.
But well, I think it's one of the most common marketing strategies, right? Like, it's basically creating like a straw man argument, or sometimes, you know, there is a real argument there, but it's like, instead of just saying we're an amazing program that help women do XYZ or help people do XYZ, you're having to say we're not diet culture, we're not this, we're anti this. And it's like, the only way that you can show how good you are is by pulling other people down. Like, we're not starting our program like everybody else at the start of January because we want you to enjoy yourself more for longer, blah blah blah. Like, as if actually that means that you couldn't enjoy yourself if you did start the program, right? Which, fine, maybe that's true for that specific program, but it's like, it shouldn't be true, right?
No. But I think what's interesting is that there's loads of different cohorts of people that will respond to those things differently. And actually, like, I think that on one hand, for some people, like, exercising straight after Christmas, I guess, could even be triggering because that is something that they're used to doing to punish themselves. So there might actually be some benefit to waiting for some people. But I think it's, again, it comes back to the intent. And I think also what's really difficult, I think, for consumers is that, like, obviously, you know, we know you professionally, we know your approach, we know Dan's approach in terms of coaching and all of that kind of stuff. We know that you guys are safe coaches and you promote exercise and health in a really positive way. But if someone was coming across, like, let's say someone came across a sponsored ad for your coaching program and also a sponsored ad for some other random generic coaching program from a, you know, Fitspo who was promoting exercise that was, you know, punishing and stuff, the differences aren't always very clear on the surface. Like, I think that's what makes it so difficult. So then you've got a lot of people who have had really negative experiences with working with certain coaches or in certain ways with exercise, and so are automatically quite suspicious of fitness programs, health programs, transformation programs and stuff like that, that they will throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I think anyone who's promoting a transformation program must be trash. Anyone who's promoting a post-Christmas fat loss program must be trash. And we know different because we know the people that are doing it and that are doing it well.
But what's interesting is a lot of this messaging is coming from people within our industry who know us, right? And who you would hope would be also running programs that aren't fad diet. So it's not the people that are like, oh, I don't know the difference between the EC method and some shitty shred program, right? That would be a different audience, right? Yeah. I completely understand your point there, but that isn't what we're talking about.
Yeah, and that's the intent thing. What you were saying is that it's not that these people aren't promoting, but they're shitting on the other people, like the people that they know, like you, that are doing great things. They're trying to drag those down in order to place people on their one, which is better, which again is just, I don't know whether that's a normal competitive thing, but I think it's, again, just social media being a crap place to communicate this stuff because there is so much nuance to it, is even the language that we use is, you know, if it is about empowering people and not imprisoning them with their behaviors, it's when we say things like back on track, I think sometimes reinforces that if you're not following a strict path, that you're off track or you're off the beaten track of things.
Or the wagon.
Yeah, the wagon. And it kind of...
Who's used that, a wagon, by the way?
I think that can feed into the all or nothing mentality as well, because like the track is the track, and it's when we're working with people, it's navigating different terrain. It's not being on it or off it.
Yeah, again, so I think the issue with that is I use back on track quite a lot. In fact, I used it yesterday, right?
I used it earlier in the podcast as well, actually, too.
And the reason for that is because people resonate with it. And again, this is the problem with like short form content, where you have to resonate with someone pretty quickly, right? If that is the language that my clients use, so that's the language that I will use as well. And I completely agree, like, you can get a bit more nuanced with it and be like, well, there shouldn't really be an on or an off. It's just like, you're always on track. It's just, you kind of swayed to the side a little bit, but then it's like, how much are you just pulling at hairs? And like, are they really thinking that's like an all or nothing thing? And I think it's an important point to make. Like, you shouldn't be on a diet or off a diet. You're just eating in different ways. Right. And maybe you want to eat more in line with this way, that's more in line with your goals, but that's not quite as punchy as like, do you want to get yourself back on track? And that's kind of how people feel. Like, I don't have like an all or nothing mindset with food, but I still use with my own narrative, like, oh, I'm kind of like not quite in the routine I wanted to be in. Thus, I need to kind of get back on track. And I guess that's partly, if we're coming back to marketing, it's like, there's the ideal, but are people there yet? And how do you attract the people that you want to attract? Like, same with things like using the word toning, right? Some people might be like, oh, toning's not a real thing. Like, you shouldn't use it. Actually, if your clients use that word and you know what they mean lose a bit of fat and build a bit of muscle and feel a bit tighter and like maybe fit in their clothes a bit better. Fine. Also use the word toning. Like, yeah, you know what they mean.
Yeah. I also feel a bit like, I kind of coming from the angle again, from the client point of view, is when it comes to habit and behavior change, I think it is like, I've always found Christmas a really difficult time. And I have found it like, there have been times when I have been on track, quote unquote, for months and months and months. And then Christmas comes and I make a very conscious decision not to worry about it and just to just be more relaxed about it. But inevitably, that deviates from that into kind of a complete reversal and reverting to old habits, because everything about Christmas is seasonal. Like, the music comes back, it's all nostalgic. It's all doing things how you used to do things, how you did them when you were a kid, all of that kind of stuff. So everything comes back into it, I think, for a lot of people. So they get back all of these old habits, and I will find myself eating in ways at Christmas that I wouldn't dream of eating throughout the year because it's Christmas, quote unquote. And I think that's part of the reason why people get so fearful about letting go over Christmas, because then once you do that, it almost feels like you're starting from scratch to try and reinstitute all of those changes. And I found it, there have been times when I found that it's taken me till like March or April to get back to living the way that I had been used to living throughout the year. And there is quite possible that that's more reflective of that I hadn't necessarily instilled the habits how I thought I had, or that maybe some of my habits were more restrictive than I'd wanted them to be, or maybe I was relying too much on things like tracking and stuff like that. So there's always work to be done from that perspective. But also, I think getting back on track can actually really mean a lot to people at this time, and is a really, really hard thing to do, because it's like you've intentionally reversed these habit changes that you've spent so long trying to instill. And then now what, you're just expected to just do it all again. And that's really like, it can be quite demoralizing, I think, for people.
Yeah. I think it comes with the significance of the time of year as well, because we can probably all reflect on the rubbish stats when it comes to New Year's resolutions and stuff. But people, I think people are just bored of hearing that, because regardless of knowing those things, for them, it is almost in their mind a blank slate. Like, it is a good time for a reset. For me, I'm not a massive New Year's-y person. A gent I work with, he described it as the gooch for the new year, because he hates New Year so much. He's like, Christmas, joyous, depending on your preference. New Year's, misery. So like this in-between phase, it's like, I just feel totally lost. But for a lot of people, it is a total blank slate for them. And regardless of...
In the like behavior change research, that actually proves it's a good time to make change. I can't remember the exact like terminology that was used, but there's a really good book by Katie Milkman. I think it's called something like change or something like that. But anyway, she's a behavioural change researcher, and it's something like, it's basically the fresh start phenomenon that actually, like, on a birthday, on New Year's, at, like, you know, on a Monday, whatever, like, that it is one of the best times to change.
Interesting. I suppose that's one of those other things, isn't it? It's like, we don't have to understand it always. Like, people have their own motives and their motivations. If someone finds the new year really impactful for them, a great time to get back on track, that might be a cracking start for them, the start of the year. That might wane a couple of months in. They might get through that out of pure willpower and stubbornness, but actually they might make some real significant progress those first couple of months.
Also, don't you think, like, you know, if someone sticks to diet and exercise for the first month of the year, it's better than doing none. Like, what's the alternative? Don't set any New Year's resolutions and then don't change. Like, okay, why don't you try? And even if it doesn't work out, and then maybe think about, like, why it didn't work previously. Is it because you were like, I'm going to go to the gym 5 times a week and I'm never going to drink alcohol again, and I'm only going to eat, like, things that are green and blah, blah. Like, have you gone, like, way too far? And could you set something that's more realistic? Yeah. On the same, like, kind of merit of that, like, sometimes I shocking from me, but, like, kind of like going, like, hard and extreme for a period of time and then coming back down, especially after something like Christmas that has been overindulgent, like, I actually don't want, like, I don't really need to be that flexible with my diet because I've literally eaten everything I could possibly want to eat, and now I feel a little bit gross. Like, I'm happy to not eat chocolate for a little bit of time, or to, like, have it way less often than I would normally have it. And I'm happy to push myself a little bit more because I have this motivation. But then, instead of giving up and being, like, quote unquote, off track, all or nothing, like, yeah, I'll come back down to maybe 3 workouts a week. Like, I'll set myself, what I like to set is, like, minimum targets, which are really just, like, to me, the standards that you hold of yourself, and then, like, optimal. So it might be, like, optimal might be 5 workouts a week, and minimum might be 3 workouts a week, and, like, optimal might be 12,000 steps on average a week, and minimum, like, as a target, I wouldn't go to bed unless I've done 8,000 steps a day or something. And then you've kind of got this range to work between. And hey, for the first month, when you're really motivated, you might be hitting those optimums, but then you don't go below that standard that you've set yourself, which should be well within your reach. And, like, the numbers I just gave are mine, so they might not be, you know, like, people often take these numbers and, like, oh, that's exactly what I should be doing. It's probably not. But just as, like, an example,
I feel like that's almost, like, the inherent problem, isn't it? Like, people's general attitude towards exercise and movement is not something I do from a self-care point of view. You know, I go for a walk, not because it's a great thing to do for my mind, it's great to get some fresh air, some natural daylight, etc. I do it for my steps, and, like, exercise is only something I invest in to change the shape of my body. Whereas I think if most people have a different view on them, like, physical activity is, as you said, singularly the most significant thing you can do for your health, regardless of what it is, even if it's not to change the shape of your body. If that, so many people just quit on everything over December. I'm not necessarily saying anyone should lead their life the way I do, but although my nutritional habits do change over the Christmas period, my exercise habits are pretty much the same. Still take the dog for a long walk. We still go for walks as a family. I still exercise the same routine. I might not get up on Christmas Day and do it, but my exercise routine is pretty much staple. It's when people, I guess, switch off for the entire month. And, like, not to make judgment on that, but a majority of people do, which is why getting back on track is so difficult for them. And they do have this all or nothing mentality towards exercise and training. And they do see it as a punishment or something they have to do rather than they just enjoy.
It's also really hard to go for walks in England and Scotland in December, because it's just pouring with rain or freezing cold and really slippery all the time. I actually bought a treadmill off Amazon that I now keep in my living room and don't use, which is really useful. But no, I do use it. I just haven't been around that much. But I found it even difficult to keep up my physical activity, even with a treadmill, because it's quite loud and irritating as well. You don't kind of think about the things that, and you can't do anything while you're standing on the treadmill, because you just feel like if you move, you'll also die. So it can be quite troubling. But it's all about reducing friction, isn't it? Because no matter why you're doing that physical activity, whether it's to get your steps or whether it's for all of those other things, weight loss or whatever, you still get all of the benefits of doing the physical activity regardless of the reasons. So even
but the intent matters, right? Coming back to that, like, what's that saying? Like, the man who loves walking will walk further than the man who loves the destination.
Yeah, but you can't always modify the intent. Actually, there are some situations where, you know, I'm never going to enjoy going for a walk in the rain. But if I felt like I had to have 10,000 steps a day, I might walk in the rain.
Yeah, but you can enjoy like the outcome of that, which is that, yeah, okay, like, I'm not saying that walking in the rain is always fun, right? Mm. Although I am a big advocate of trying to make everything fun, and I think that you can do a lot with that intention.
Yeah, I agree.
Want to take that forward, go and apply it to all areas of your life, and you'll stick to something way more if it's fun. But yeah, let's say it's a dark night and it's raining and it's cold and you don't want to go out, like, you would still feel like, I think it's knowing that you will feel better immediately in terms of, like, I know that I will sleep better, I know that my brain function will get better, I know that I'll be more productive, I know that I'll be happier around my family, like, I'll still get an endorphin rush from this. Like, and I think focusing on the immediate reward of exercise and activity will help people with the delayed reward, because yeah, you're right. Like, will you notice any difference getting in your 10,000 steps in terms of fat loss the next day? No, of course not. Like, that kind of stuff takes time, but actually, will your mood improve? And then I also think allowing yourself to feel good about yourself for doing that, like, hey, I promised myself I would hit my 10,000 steps. And I actually showed up for myself and I did that even on the day I didn't want to. I don't think people give themselves enough credit for that. And like, allow yourself to feel smug's probably not the right word, but like, yeah, like a bit smug about yourself. Like, hey, like, I said, I'd do that. It's not
cultivating confidence, right? I think it's proving to yourself you can do it. And I think what you were saying there, Mike, is although you might not love the process all the time, you understand and appreciate the value of it enough to make yourself do it regardless. And I think that's, you know, a message I'm always trying to stress is that you might not love it, but providing you see the value in it means that, I think discipline is a bit of a bad rep. I think it has become almost a little bit elitist in how it's communicated, but really it's making you do the thing that you don't really want to do because you understand the value of it. So when you don't want to go walking outside in the rain, but you have got an indoor treadmill, the likelihood is you're going to do it, even though you don't really want to, because you recognize the longer term value of that. But that's taken into account as well. Everyone's journey, like, you know, you have an understanding of this stuff. A lot of people, again, using January as a great opportunity, they don't see the value in these things, therefore the only value they see is changing how they look, and that's enough for them to get started. It might be 6 months down the line, a year down the line, that they better understand the reasons behind it as well.
I find what's really motivating on days like that, and this might just be a me thing, but I'm always like, this is when other people would give up. This is what puts me in the 1% of people.
That's your competitive spirit.
This is what makes me better than everybody else.
Well, no, do you know what? This is what makes you above average. And when you look at what average is, I've just got a book, actually. It's called The Myth of Normal. Dan, I think you'd like it. It's like all like psychological theories. But anyway.
That's not Gabor Mate.
Yeah.
I haven't read it yet, but I've heard good things about it.
It's very big, which is quite intimidating. But anyway, I think it's not... I haven't read enough of it to know exactly what it's about, but I'm like a big kind of anti-average person of like, if you look at what the averages are for most people in the UK, like, you don't want to be that. So you're right. The average person wouldn't go out and get their steps in, but the average person is also overweight and inactive and unhealthy and is at a very high risk of developing disease, like cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes as they age. Like, that's going to become the norm. If you don't want that to be the norm for you, you can't act in a way that is the norm. Mm-hmm. So you have to act out with what people would deem as normal. And I think knowing that and understanding that and then being like, oh yeah, well, most people wouldn't do that. Most people would then think, well, then I won't bother doing it. Well, no, because if you don't want the outcome that most people have, you can't behave in a way that most people would.
Mm. Yeah. It's definitely a language and how it's communicated thing. Because I found the only thing that, I don't want to say aggravated, but I guess not even mild annoyance, was just like, I don't get that, is when you see stuff promoted this time of year and it's a picture of someone maybe 3 years ago and then they've done their own sort of physical transformation and it's like, sign up for my January 6 week program. I'm like, I don't,
this took me 10 years. Sign up for my
I don't get that, but also I don't get why you're using yourself. Like, why is a visual of you with your butt cheeks out?
I think people do buy into people more if they've got their own transmation.
They've walked the walk.
Yeah, I do, but I don't see the value in it. I see why people would buy into it, but I'm like, I don't understand actually the benefit apart from getting people to sign up to that, in which you are kind of using your body to market it.
But that's what the purpose is of that.
That's the purpose of it.
Yeah, but like, what's the value to the actual person signing up is what I mean.
Well, they think, yeah, like Mike said, they've walked the walk. They know what it's like. They can show me how to do it because they've done it themselves. I mean, it makes logical sense, right? I do think
we know that it's not necessarily reflective of reality. Like, just because you've done it yourself, it doesn't mean that you can coach other people to do that. Mm. But that's...
Or I had my own coach who helped me do this, and now I'm going to tell you how
Well, that's likely what it is. I suppose that's just having that awareness of it, which a lot of people don't. So maybe I'm taking that for granted.
Mm. It's a minefield to navigate, I think, as a client. But that's why, like, I find it really intriguing in terms of things like choosing coaches and stuff like that. Like, I follow a lot of people on Instagram. I see a lot of fitness type content, and I could probably count on the fingers of one hand the number of coaches I would actually use if I was looking for a new coach. Like, and because I feel like through consuming all of that content, I've become quite discerning as to what I believe makes somebody capable of helping somebody to change. I've seen it done really well.
Well, what do you think the key attributes are? Joe, I get this question quite a lot of like, what should I look for in a coach?
Well, I think first of all, somebody has to actually be passionate about their job as a career and not be doing it because it's a job. Like, somebody who is like, oh, I'm looking for a job. I quite like fitness. I know I'll be a personal trainer. There are a lot of those sorts of people who are passionate about their own fitness. They're not necessarily passionate about helping other people achieve those goals. You see the fire in people who are so proud of their clients that have made the changes that they want to. You see how excited some coaches get by reposting their clients' achievements, whether it's non-scale victories, whether it's transformation posts, whatever it is. You see, you can genuinely feel the buzz. And for some people, those posts are marketing, exactly like Dan was talking about. They're just ways of getting other people to sign up. And for some people, this is what lights them on fire, is actually helping people change. And I think that you have to have the emotional intelligence to understand that there's more than one way of doing things. You have to also have the emotional intelligence to be able to listen to the clients and to understand why these methods might not be working for them, so you can change those methods in order to do that. I mean, like, I use it as an example, like my own coach, like when it was lockdown and we couldn't go to the gym anymore, the amount of effort that I could see my coach put into running Skype sessions, figuring out what equipment people had at home, trying to get hold of different equipment for the different clients that would be doing these group sessions so that we could all manage to do the group sessions, yet all of us having slightly different equipment. So those group sessions actually being really tricky to manage, and actually stopping at nothing to try and make those things work. That to me is the greatest marketing technique you can ever have, is actually just being a good coach. And you notice really quickly who cares and who doesn't. But you also have to have like skills in coaching, because some people won't know what to do if a hack squat isn't available. Or won't know what to do if they haven't got barbells and you're working out of a hotel gym and you've just got this, that, or the other, or vice versa. Like, it I think is genuinely difficult to coach unless you have some experience of coaching.
What would be your tip then? So obviously you've got loads of awareness from being exposed to so much. Tip for someone that to kind of discern that for themselves just by glance on social media. Because everything you described there, like how much you care, I think that's really difficult to communicate online.
Well, I think the first thing that I would say is that I would never sign up to a coach without getting to know them a little bit first. And I don't mean getting to know them as a person, but I just mean follow them on Instagram for a little while. It will soon become clear who this person is and what they value and what they care about and how skilled they are. Listen to their testimonials, listen to what the people are actually saying, not just, you know, lots of people will ask their clients for testimonials and they'll be like, yeah, great, I had a great time, I lost loads of weight. Yeah, cool. Okay. But I want to know what they did to actually help you. I want to know what it was that made you think that they cared about you, what it was that is their level of skill, their level of experience, the kinds of people that they've worked with, the kinds of results that they've got. Are they just about aesthetics, or are they helping people with, you know, their mindset, their behavior change, all of those sorts of things as well? Because there are a lot of coaches who will get really good results by just making people feel a bit shitty if they don't comply with their coaching programs. Like, that you've got people who are scared to tell their client, their coaches, when they cheat on their diet, cheat quote unquote on their diet, and that will yield results for a 6-week program or a 12-week program, but it's not necessarily going to yield long-term behavior change. So I think that that's sort of where I'm at, is I'm interested in seeing the people that are talking about their clients who lead completely different lives now to the lives they led 5 years ago, for example, and who've stuck with those coaches, or not even necessarily stuck with those coaches, but stuck with the principles that they've learned from those coaches because of how impactful it's been.
And just because I know that we'll have probably a lot of coaches listening to this as well, like, this is gold, and also means that your content needs to have all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people don't, they've got like, yeah, a little quote from a client maybe here and there. But like, if Mike's saying you need to get to know someone, you cannot get to know someone, coming back to what we were talking about at the start, from a 15 second reel, yeah, which is you voicing over some audio. Like, that's not getting to know someone. That gives almost no value at all. That's why you need a longer form piece of content. Like, people who get on a call with me already feel like they know me, because often they've listened to like hundreds of hours of me talking on a podcast. Our like lead gen for the EC method is like people listening to like probably 50, 60 podcasts before they sign up. So they've literally been essentially listening to Chloe and I. They get to know us ridiculously well before they even sign up. Mm-hmm. If you don't have that kind of infrastructure, how can someone get to know you? Mm-hmm. And you've got to really think about this online. I see it with a lot of face-to-face trainers that move online, because it's easy to do that face-to-face. Like, the rapport that you build, even from just opening the door for someone and being like, hope you have a nice day, or like, mm-hmm, the bathroom's that way, like, it, you'd have to spend weeks and weeks on social media building that level of, oh, I kind of like this person, or they seem like a nice person. That's why you need longer form content. That's why you need to put more time and effort into that. And then there's a really good quote on this from James Clear, which is, good marketing can sell once, but only a good product can sell twice. In the long run, your performance reverts to the value that you provide, which basically means, yeah, you can market a 6-week shred, but if you're a shit coach, nobody's staying on. And yeah, retention is so, so important in coaching, if it, even from like a business perspective, but certainly from a results perspective.
Yeah, I think just speaking to what you mentioned there, Mike, as well, as like how you make people feel and the sort of person you are, like from a personability point of view, I do think that's important, because I think we've had discussion about it many times. It's like the difference between, don't get me wrong, like there are obviously others that do have exceptional knowledge in certain areas, but from a coaching perspective, like the difference in knowledge is marginal, but how they are as people, how they communicate certain things, like how relatable they are, how personable they are, that is hugely different between coaches. And I think you're...
But the knowledge is hugely different as well. Like, having worked with quite a few coaches recently.
Well, maybe I'm thinking of our echo chamber. Maybe, yeah, I'm thinking about our echo chamber. But
honestly, even within that, like, I think you probably forget how far, I mean, like, you've been coaching for so long now, there's no way a new coach, and obviously everybody starts somewhere, but there's no way a new coach has even an ounce of the knowledge that you have. And I would include in that, like, you know, it's not just knowledge, but it's experience from working with different people, and it's like how you communicate with certain clients and blah blah blah. But like, there's a huge knowledge gap. There's also, interestingly, a huge work ethic gap. Like, I think hard work for someone is like an hour's work block for somebody else. Like, it is wildly different. And I didn't realize that until I started working with so many people, that I was like, wow. So this person's like, oh, I've done a lot. And they're like, they've literally done a hell of a lot. And someone else has done a lot and they've done 2 social media posts. Or it would be too much to be able to post on Instagram once a day. Like, come on. If that's literally your job to be doing that, like, come on.
Do you think that's the difference between being busy and productive and just being busy? Because it's easy to make yourself busy all of the time, but actually being productive within that time and doing the things you need to is a different story, I think, sometimes.
It's partly that, but I think it's partly just like, some people think hard work is posting on social media once a day, or having couple of clients.
Do you think that's like access to the industry as well, though? Because now you can do things like an online course and go straight onto online coaching. Whereas
I think it's what you've experienced. Like, I remember going from medical school to going to take a year out to do a BSc, and like medical school lectures were like, teaching was 8 hours, 8-9 hours a day. And then suddenly it's like you finish at 11 a.m. because your lectures are done.
Yeah,
and then
you go and sort of sit in the library.
I think for some people, like a tough work day is 16 hours. And for some people, a tough work day is finishing at 3. Yeah. And I think it doesn't mean that their lives aren't tough, that they're not doing work in other ways. Like, they might be caring for people, raising families. They might be having other responsibilities, running other sort of errands, all of that sort of stuff as well. Or they might be traveling a lot to work. So, there's lots of different ways of working, but those all won't necessarily all be productive from like a career perspective, right? So it's interesting that people will just have different backgrounds of what they think is hard work. Like for me, when I was studying for exams, my idea of a difficult day of study was I'd write myself a 10-hour study program, and I'd be taking regular half-hour breaks or 15-minute breaks, but I would be studying for 10 hours a day. And I had to do that because I was completely lazy for the whole rest of the year. So for 6 weeks, I had to work for 10 hours a day. So then if you ask me what do you think is hard work for studying, I'd say 10 hours a day. But for other people, they probably only needed to do 3 hours a day because they'd done 3 hours a day for like the whole year. Mm-hmm. And so actually they would consider 3 hours a day as the hardest they would need to work. So until you've had to do something, I think it seems impossible. Like, I never understood.
It's a glass ceiling, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so incredible about surrounding yourself with other people and seeing what they're doing. So if I was like, oh, well, you can't possibly study for more than 4 hours a day, and then I saw you studying for 10, I'd be like, wow, that's possible, right? Mm, and it might not mean that I did 10, but I might start doing 8 or something like that.
Yeah,
I think that's really interesting. But I spoke to Hannah about this as well. Hannah Richard, she was like, what's been amazing from managing people is like work output is just wildly different. And I mean, I've never had to work in kind of a capacity where you'd have it like employees and you just have wildly different work outputs. But that's quite interesting as well. It's like a day's work isn't like, you know, you have one employee, they do X. So if you have two, they'll do double that. No, it doesn't work like that. Like, actually, some people's output is very, very different. And then,
and some people are high output, low quality, and some people are low output, high quality. And you might actually prefer that as well. Like, it's fascinating how different people like just complete like function in different ways in every way. And that's why, again, coming back to coaching, is that that's why having an understanding of people having some emotional intelligence is so important, because you can't just be like, oh, well, you're not doing this because you're lazy, because there are many reasons why people will be doing stuff in a different way.
Yeah. I think one of the most beneficial things I experienced was when I was at uni first starting as a PT, and I did some voluntary hours in the S&C suite. And the S&C suite, you'd have athletes that are like, they're just super compliant. Whatever on their program, they would just do. And then doing my PT hours of an evening, and literally just someone that had spent all day trying to muster up the courage to come into the gym, and me just not being able to wrap my head around, well, like, they can do that. But and I think that was such a harsh and important learning curve for me. Just the disparity.
How much more impressive is the person that mustered the courage to come to the gym?
Absolutely.
A little bit than the athlete.
Those guys in the S&C suite, if there was a typo on their program, they would do it. If there was an extra zero at the end of a 1,000 burpees, just use an extreme example, they would just do it. They wouldn't even question it. Whereas, as you said, it's so much more to learn from people that have real life challenges, real life experiences. And that's what's so interesting about that, because it's all relative to the individual, but relative to their moment in time. Because again, like, if I reflect back to stupidly early days when you're just doing as many PT hours as possible, like, you're doing 9 hours in a day of PT, and just think, what was the quality of those sessions towards the latter part of the day? To think of doing that now with all the other life responsibilities I have, I just couldn't possibly do that.
Nine hours of PT.
I
think the same about stuff like night shifts. Like, I think back to the kind of stuff that there were times when in certain jobs you do these 24-hour on calls, but you would be supposed to have some sort of cover overnight. And then, but frequently the person wouldn't turn up or they have a gap in the rotor or something. So you'd have this sort of 24-hour shift and then have to go to work the next day. And I just, it's like really ludicrous to me now to expected to do that.
I'm going to butcher the exact example, so I'm hoping you can remember it. What is the doctor, or who is the doctor that that original shift pattern was worked off of?
Many
years later, it found out he was addicted
Margaret
to cocaine.
Thatcher.
But he was addicted to cocaine. So this ridiculous shift pattern has been based on this guy, on this doctor that back in the day just used to power through because he was.
Oh, one way to do it. Well, interestingly, that's how I realized that the PTs I was working with, because I was like, how are people doing this many hours and then like still going out after work and stuff? And then I realized.
Yeah,
that's what they were doing.
Oh my god!
Big underground drug culture everywhere.
Health and fitness.
I don't think any profession is excluded from that. Shocking. Each their own.
Outrageous.
Yeah, I'd finish work like when I worked PT in that particular situation. I was like, I think I had to get up at like 5 to get to work at 6, whatever. But by 3, when I finished, I was like. Dead. Yeah. There was no way. I think I used to go to bed at like 8 p.m. And then they'd just be like living their best lives, going out, blah, blah, blah. Mm. I was like, where are people getting this energy? Well, there you go.
Now you know.
Split shifts were a killer. I really resented. I hated towards the end. I wouldn't work any later than 7 because if I was doing like a 7 to 8 and even earlier, I was doing an 8 to 9. You'd go home, literally go to bed and be up at silly o'clock to get in at 6 a.m. the next day. It's not sustainable.
Goodness.
But I do, even now, I do really miss in-person PT.
I do as well.
Not enough to pay £1,000 rent somewhere. No, because you can't just go in somewhere and pay per person. Most places are like £1,000 for your rent.
And then if you don't want to do enough hours to make that money back, then you're paying money to train people.
Yeah. What was the other thing? What was the other point we were going to talk about?
Let's save it for next time. We've been going about an hour, haven't we?
Shall we out? Doesn't time fly when you're having
fun? Doesn't it? It's almost like we enjoy this podcast and maybe we should do it more often.
Something like that. Just to finish.
Our New Year's resolution.
Yeah, I was going to say, just to finish, do you have a New Year's resolution as we're talking about New Year's?
I'd love to do the podcast.
I'd love to do the podcast.
That's an awkward pause.
Do you remember that?
Because when you're emotionally blackmailed and put on the spot, then you have to comply, obviously. No, genuinely, I would. There's never any pushback from me. I never say I don't want to do it.
You
sound like an awful human.
I do think it is interesting that the last podcast that we did that was about 2 months ago, we made a big announcement that we were going to be doing the podcast every week, didn't we? So maybe it's not a good idea to to say we'll do it every week.
Obviously, public commitments haven't worked for us so far. Yeah.
The shame of living with that.
Yeah, I'm sorry, listeners, but where was our accountability? Like, we put this out there and nobody came back and was like, excuse me, where's my podcast? Because maybe then we would have done it. Maybe they don't want to hear it.
Maybe they were the ones giving us 1-star reviews on Apple.
Maybe.
Did someone give us a 1-star review?
I don't. You said that, didn't you? Like, no one's actually written anything, but you can see, like, on the little progress bars, there's.
Should we have a little look?
Oh, don't. For some reason, that stuff like that, it feels really personal, the podcast.
It is kind of personal because it's bloody
free. I like the guys, but that girl is so fucking annoying.
Do you remember that person that said it was really annoying when girls put their hands above their head?
Oh, yeah.
It's
great to see girls talking at events, but it's a shame that they felt the need to...
touch their hair. Yeah.
Touch their hair.
Ridiculous. I do kind of feel it is a bit personal though.
Yeah,
it is personal, isn't it? It's about personal. Your stuff.
It's free, and also, like, if you don't like something, just don't leave a review. Like, keep that.
You know that there's another podcast now called Fitness Unfiltered.
Yeah, it's a woman, isn't it?
No, there's now three, because there was one previously, but now there's another one by someone called Carmen. But anyway, we have got a rating of 4.9, 298 reviews. So shit, yeah, we do out. Have some one-star reviews, so see all.
Aww. No, I can't. It's too upsetting.
It's about, it's about us personally. Don't read it out.
I don't know that there are any written ones. I think all the written ones. Oh, I thought that was a one star, but it was a big emoji saying okay. There's a four star. There's another four star.
Oh god.
Another seven out of seven. These are the vast majority of these are five star reviews of the written one. In fact, there's no there's a couple of four star ones, but then clearly someone with personal vendettas against us, because there can be no other reason, has put a one star review. But it's more than one person.
Oh gosh.
Well, I hope you're okay, person that gave us.
Yeah, because obviously you must
it's
have.
It's definitely a you problem. Yeah. That's a you problem. You're
hurt people hurt people, and that's the only explanation.
I heard this. Do you know who Seth Godin is?
Yeah.
So he doesn't read any reviews, and he turned them all off on his blog. And initially I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, because sometimes you get good feedback, right? I'm pretty sure initially we had reviews about how poor the sound quality was. Then we improved the sound quality slightly. And then we've reverted back to poor sound quality. But anyway, like, you can sometimes get good feedback. But I did kind of like when he explained why he didn't do that, it's because he was saying that then whenever he wrote a blog, he'd be thinking, what will people say? Right. And it's exactly what we think on social media. Yeah. Oh, if I say this, would it come across like this? Or what will people think of this? And then actually, it's not your true idea anymore. Yeah. It's tainted by what
it's
you
based
think
on the
someone's gonna
you might get.
Yeah, and then it doesn't make your it makes your writing worse.
I
especially
agree.
If you're like him and you're trying to be like a more creative writer, and like I guess to some extent it's sometimes important with what we're writing about, like, will this negatively affect someone, and like, do I need to put some caveats in here or whatever? But I think it probably does like curb your creativity.
Yeah, 100%.
It works both ways around, doesn't it, as well? Because if you're always getting positive stuff talking about certain things, again, you're curating your content based on what people might think of it. So it's positive or negative, yeah.
Did I tell you about the 8-minute video that I got critiquing my weekly email?
From whom?
I think it was a bit of a misfire, actually.
No, who's from home?
Yeah, sorry. I accidentally sent you an 8-minute.
No. I mean a misfire in the sense that it was clearly like a marketing strategy from somebody who is, I think, like a copywriter or whatever, and is obviously trying to get clients to sign up to their
email your stuff
marketing
is shit.
Strategies
Let
or
me
whatever.
Make it better for you.
Yeah, and so they sent me this email saying, oh, I'm a new subscriber. I've got some feedback on your email. And it basically just tore apart one of my emails. But it was all based on like, well, this isn't going to grab people's attention. And then when you're trying to sell them something, then they're not going to do this. And then people don't know what this is. Like, it's not clear what you're getting at. And I was like, well, it's not clear what I'm getting at, because I think it's like, you know, maybe you don't get it, but you don't get it because you don't actually know what this is. Like, this email, my weekly email, is an exercise in me practicing writing something once a week without being asked to or paid to or told to by somebody else or given a subject. It's about me practicing like writing. With no expectation of people subscribing, with nothing to sell people, and with absolutely no marketing whatsoever. And so to try and kind of make me feel like it's not achieving its goal, it is by definition achieving its goal, because I've done it every week. Then if people want to read it, then amazing. But if people don't want to read it, then it's still actually achieving its goal. And there's no lead. It's not like a...
Yeah, the assumption is you have an agenda rather than you just do it because
exactly.
You want to do it.
And I get, actually, there was this part of me that was like, oh, that's nice of somebody to take all that time to try and give me feedback. And then I was like, well,
Come on, let's be honest. There was no part of you that was thinking, this is a really nice thing this person has done.
No, you're right. There wasn't. I tried to think that, but actually I was just irritated by it. And then they did that thing where they... constantly
circle back
follow-up emails going, just wondering, you know, just if you've had a chance to look at this.
Yeah, my
and I wrote back this tirade of like, actually, let me give you some feedback on how to contact people who you're trying to get business from firstly. And then I thought, no, I've got better things to do than this, so I just ignored it.
Did you say you did send that email, didn't you?
I didn't. It's in my drafts. Maybe I'll finish it one day. Who knows?
No, you're never going to have time for that. Just write another weekly email.
Exactly. About it.
Well, now you're talking about
what subscribers.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll leave the note to the to Mike's weekly email in the show notes.
Yeah, subscribe.
I see what you did there, Mike. I see what you did
there. Exactly. That's my new marketing strategy. Bye.
Bye. So long.